Blessed be the Lord, my strength, which teacheth my hands to war and my fingers to fight. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. We're going to be launching into the truth tonight of 9/11. Today is September 11th, 2023. And we're going to return to that ominous day when America died on September 11th, 2001, in my opinion. Because on September 11th, 2001, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, crime against humanity was committed against the United States and the world by elements within the United States and Israel and Mossad, CIA, Saudi Arabia. The list goes on and on. And Americans were killed. Property was destroyed. The American media were conspirators along with politicians and military members in the greatest fraud that has ever been committed against the American people. And I think that day, September 11th, 2001, was the day God began the guillotine of judgment upon this country. And it has taken 20 years, but alas, it is coming back upon us now in the form of invading hordes of third world migrant savages from every third world country below the Mexican border to transgender, schizophrenic, sexually confused, mad dogs calling themselves Democrats and their offspring to climate worship. And all sorts of other enslavement operations, weather weapons and things like that. You're going to go on and on, but judgment is upon this country. And I think it's essential to look at why it's on this country, what happened on September 11th, 2001. So we're going to be joined by the great Mike Harris. I don't think there's anyone better who can provide both an intelligent assessment of the scientific physicality of the 9/11 events, specifically what occurred at the Twin Tower World Trade Center buildings, what occurred at the Solomon buildings, Building 7, what occurred in the Pentagon building attack, what occurred in Pennsylvania. Those four events translated into this military American empire expansionism, which has now destroyed our reputation around the world, destroyed our military, destroyed any semblance of being a liberator or light on a hill or Captain America, whatever heroic manifestation you like to define America as. We are not that. We are perceived as a rapist and a destroyer of nations. And 9/11 was the starting point. And I don't say that critically. I say it as a matter of fact. So we're going to jump into the facts, and people better be prepared for a roller coaster of enlightenment, knowledge, acceleration, and the quickening of wisdom as you perceive and see and absorb what Mike Harris is going to be presenting. So, Mike, it is wonderful. I'll hand it just to you to say, where do you want to start on this vast volume of almost a Tolstoy sort of epic of war that began in 9/11. Go ahead and tell us what your thoughts are on 9/11, what it is, what it was, what caused it, where we're going, wherever you want to go. Go ahead, Mike Harris.
Well, greetings, LT. Thank you for having me on 9/11. This is really a humbling day to be on because of the tragedy that did happen to this country. But I really don't want to focus so much on what the official narrative is. We all watched on TV, and we allegedly saw planes crashing into the Twin Towers and causing a fire, bringing everything down. Well, we know that's impossible. It's just the physics don't support it. Something else happened that day. The two overwhelming theories at this point in time are one, that it was a nuclear event on U.S. soil, because a nuclear device has a unique reaction with Freon, and the largest reservoirs of Freon in North America were in the basement of the Twin Towers running the cooling system. And so that there's a lot more to be said there. You don't take 250,000 tons of concrete and steel and turn it to dust. I mean, it essentially vaporized. I want to point out that during the 80s, when Ronald Reagan was president, there was almost $1 trillion spent on what he called the SDI, the Strategic Defense Initiative, called Star Wars. That technology that was developed has never been released to the public. And so what is in there? I'm I'm aware of certain elements of it, like the X-ray lasers. That is a nuclear pulse laser from orbit going through a zinc rod that will literally cut, through half the mantle of the Earth. And so what else do they have up there that may have contributed to this? But what I really want to focus on tonight is the narrative, the official narrative, which is total BS. I turned on the news this morning. I knew it was going to be 9/11, and they're going through all the old, same old bullshit. And it is bullshit. Oh, the 19 hijackers. Well, it wasn't them. That's not what did this. First of all, an operation like that takes years to plan. Years. You look at the number of aircraft allegedly involved that disappeared. I don't believe anything that the news media or the official narrative tells me about 9/11. Nothing. It's all lies. Now, people were still killed, and I mourn them. I mourn the loss of those lives. But it wasn't 19 Arab hijackers. We were led into a war in Iraq and in Afghanistan that these people had nothing to do with it. Nothing. And I've been speaking with Afghanis on a somewhat regular basis on other business, trying to get normalization of relationships between the US and Afghanistan. There are so many obstacles. I'm not a State Department official. I'm not an elected official. I cannot conduct foreign policy, but I can talk to people and try to get them to listen to other perspectives. And so, talking with the new Afghan government, which, if you want to call it what the media calls it, that would be the Taliban. I've been talking to members of the Taliban, and to a man, they swear they had nothing to do with it, every one of them. But what the biggest disappointment to me is, and this is tell us how deep the shit is that we're in. The real perpetrators, after 22 years, are still walking around free. And not only that, they have enriched themselves. And I'm not just talking about lucky Larry Silverstein, who got the double indemnity for a terrorist act, walked out of there $6 billion for a building that was going to have to be destroyed. It was going to cost him $500 million to take it down. He did some pretty good financial jujitsu there and damn near bankrupted AIG Insurance Company, bankrupted another Jew. I mean, so that was a tough part of it. But I'm talking about the people who shorted the airline stocks the day before. Now, there's SEC records of this. These records still exist. They're still there. No one's ever investigated who or what or why they shorted the airlines the day before. It's sort of indicative of insider knowledge that they knew something was going to happen. It reminds me of that James Bond movie, Casino Royale, where the villain Le Chiffre is going to short he puts a $120 million bet, a short bet on a airline stock that's going to introduce a new airliner, and then he tries to blow up the airliner in order to make a fortune and make 10 to 1. Somebody knew that was going to happen. So someone knew in advance, and these people have never been taken to task. They've never been accounted for. They're nothing. They have walked free and they made a bundle off of this. The other thing I want to point out is that when the explosion at the Pentagon happened, it hit in the accounting sector where members of the Able Danger investigative team were meeting that day. Of the 39 members of the team, 36, 37 of them were killed that day in that explosion. And miraculously, all the records were destroyed. So that was the day after Donald Rumsfeld came out and said, we can't account for $2.3 trillion of Pentagon money. Senator Grassley ordered an audit of the Pentagon, and the Pentagon has to this day, 22 years later, never complied. So there's a lot of mystery
Well, let
here.
me just add to that. Dov Zakheim, Rabbi Dov Zakheim, who was the comptroller at the Pentagon at the time, who later became my direct boss at Booz Allen Hamilton, when he was put in charge of terrorist threat financing operations at MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa for U.S. Special Operations Command and U.S. Central Command as the lead contractor. Dov Zakheim, who did that and funneled all sorts of money in nefarious places, was with Rumsfeld on that appearance. And he was also involved with Project for a New American Century. He's been involved for a lot of things. His son, Roger Zakheim, worked for the law firm Covington & Burling, which before he joined that, he was also chief counsel for the House Armed Services Committee. That was Roger Zakheim. And then he went to Covington & Burling. And Covington & Burling represented Union Bank of Switzerland, as well as Saudi Arabia and other Middle Eastern kingdoms, in their terrorist financing plans and plots with the Clinton Foundation and elsewhere. So Roger Zakheim and his son Dov Zakheim and this law firm Covington & Burling, which also employed Michael Chertoff, Lanny Brewer, Eric Holder, an assortment of other criminals, is just part of this syndicate. Mike, go ahead.
Well, you bring up some good points, and there were key people in certain bottleneck positions, like the controller of the Pentagon. Really? That's a pretty key bottleneck right there. And so all this money disappeared. Now, since then, more money's disappeared from the Pentagon that they can't account for. And the Pentagon has never had an accounting. So it's becoming pretty obvious to me that the Department of Defense is one of the biggest money laundering schemes that this country has had to endure. So we've got a lot of problems here. But the other thing that happened that 9/11 was instrumental in, and don't get me wrong, when 9/11 happened, I was just like everybody else. I was ready to nuke Mecca. You know, I was, let's nuke these fuckers. Let's show them. We'll teach them what to do and all that. I drank the Kool-Aid like everybody else, okay?
Yep.
But anyone who is discerning and leads an examined life and examines these issues, looks at them carefully, the things don't make sense. But the other thing that was snuck in, that we're seeing the fruits of it today with our surveillance state and our police state and the massive censorship, and that is the Patriot Act. Now, the Patriot Act was the death of the U.S. Constitution. Mm-hmm. It was the death. And either the Patriot Act is going to stand or the Constitution is going to stand. They cannot coexist. There is an issue here. These are fundamentally at odds documents and principles. And 9/11 was used as the justification for the Patriot Act. Many other odd things happened. You remember the anthrax that showed up? You know, days after 9/11,
It went to Daschle's office.
Yeah. Because Daschle was questioning going into Iraq to look for those never found non-existent weapons of mass destruction. Okay. So here's what we know. We know Afghanistan and the Taliban, Mullah Omar and that group had nothing to do with 9/11. In fact, the Mujahideen, who were in Reagan's office when the Soviets invaded Afghanistan, were our allies. Yes. These were our friends. These were people that we were supporting in their struggle to liberate their country from the Soviets, okay? So we turned them from a friend into an adversary. This is the pattern that our Zionist, Khazar, Jew State Department follows. You betray your friends, you stab them in the back. Mm-hmm. Saddam Hussein was our ally. We were funding him and supplying him with weapons, the same as we're doing to Zelensky right now in Ukraine. We did to Saddam so he could fight the Iranians. We wanted to keep the Iranians bleeding. We wanted one of their young men to die, one of them to use ammunition and vehicles, everything they had to keep them constantly in a weakened state, the same way allegedly we're doing to Russia right now, but using Ukraine as the same vehicle. They've got a playbook. And they use it every time. I mean, the U.S. cannot be trusted as an ally. You look at Daniel Noriega.
Yes.
He was facilitating the drug trafficking that Ollie North, William Colby, and what was the third one? We're bringing in cocaine to turn it to crack to sell to the black inner cities to fund the war in El Salvador against the Sandinistas in Nicaragua.
Yes.
You know, I mean, but our State Department, our military betrays everyone. And we're at the point now where our country has no friends. We really don't. The BRICS, there are people, the Russians, the Chinese, the Indians, the South Africans, now six other countries have decided to break with the SWIFT system and start conducting business in other than petrodollars. And this is going to expand, it's going to grow, and the United States is going to find ourselves isolated and cut off from the rest of the world to where we're not going to be able to send them T-bills to pay for goods and services. We're not going to be able to buy Toyotas from Japan because Japan is going to want something of value instead of a T-bill, which is a worthless piece of fiat paper. They're going to want gold, they're going to want grain, they're going to want cattle, they're going to want some manufactured goods or something in return for what they give us. Same
But
with
Mike,
grain.
can I ask a quick rabbit trail divergence just for a second? What
Sure.
you're saying is profound, and it triggers me the thought that the psychopaths will evolve into this. I see them evolving into this new black market economy of terrorism, where we could become the terrorist nation that goes and throws napalm grenades and explosions in other countries to keep causing chaos and disruption and conflict. It seems like we are not, I know we've done that in the past, but if we're going to experience a complete economic isolation and ostracization from the rest of the world, if they're moving away and disconnecting and divorcing themselves from the US, the US is not going to allow that to happen. They're going to say, in a psychopathic obsession, you know, like lethal, what is it, that movie with Glenn Close and Michael Douglas, where she's the obsessed woman,
Yeah,
right?
what is that movie? I forget, but I know the
Fatal
one you're talking
Attraction.
about.
Fatal
Fatal
Attraction.
Attraction.
So I seriously, when you just said this, I seriously had in my mind America is going to become Glenn Close, Fatal Attraction, and they're not going to let the world go. They're going to start sowing black operations, special operations, rogue terrorist mercenary groups to blow up the Eiffel Tower, to blow up London Bridge, to blow up different parts of Australia and Moscow and elsewhere to keep America relevant, and they're going to deny, well, we never had anything to do it, but I could just see that happening, and I'm wondering what your thoughts on that is. I know it sounds insane, but it sounds logical to the insane.
My thought on that is, Scott, is the countries you named are all G7 countries. And those are going to adhere to the US and the Western position. That's collectively the West. And there's not going to be much of a breakup between them, I don't think. But it's the rest of the world. It's the Ecuadors, it's the Ghanas, it's the Senegal, it's the Thailand. Those countries are all going to say, no, we need to get something back from you that's not a treasury bill. We have no use for treasury bills. Like, we only smoke one cigar at a time. We don't need that many treasury bills. Thank you. To use them to light their cigars. But it's going to be interesting because that is where the commodities and the raw materials of the world for a manufacturing society come from. And they're going to be cut off, and the US is going to be isolated, and we are going to be a pariah state. And this is all an effect of 9/11. This is all played out to this point. They made their play. I mean, the entire world was weeping for us on 9/12, the day after. The condolences, the support we got from everyone globally was unprecedented. Nothing like that ever happened before. But we were betrayed from our own, from within. I watched videos today of George Bush giving a speech while he's standing on the rubble of 9/11, of the World Trade Center, Ground Zero, with his arm around this fire chief, and he said, "Oh, we're so brave." This guy is a lion sack of shit. He was in on it, and he is still walking around out there, eating meals and enjoying his life, same as Dick Cheney. And it's time that these people were brought to justice unmercifully. And it's the others. There's, as I said, everybody who short sold the airline stocks the day before. And I guarantee you it was more than just airline stocks, because there was a number of plays that you could make off of 9/11. If you recall, before 9/11, the US economy was faltering. And oh, 9/11 happened. We need the Federal Reserve to pump up the money supply to support our economy during this emergency. And if you're noticing a pattern now, we saw it in New Mexico this weekend, where the governor declared an emergency to defeat the Second Amendment. COVID was an emergency to violate your freedom of speech. You can't talk about that COVID's not really a problem. It's nothing more than a common cold. 9/11 was an emergency. So now they're is management of the masses by these contrived emergencies is what's going on to us right now. And until we can wake up and figure out this nonsense, and you watch the news media, and they have drank the Kool-Aid. They're still drinking it today. They're talking about how 9/11 was this tragedy and how we were set up, not realizing that, yeah, it was a tragedy. But you're blaming the wrong guy, and you're crying over the wrong thing. What it was the death of our Constitution, the death of our country here. They killed the United States. They stuck a knife in its back that day. And it was, it, I mean, follow the money every time, follow the money. And you look at the trillions missing. Then we turn around and we spend another $8-9 trillion waging war against two innocent countries. Wars we didn't even win. We're fighting goat herders in Afghanistan and got our asses kicked. For all the talk about how we have these elite special forces and we've got the best platforms and all this stuff, it's all bull. It's all a bunch of BS. Ukraine proves that our weapon systems over there, our platforms, whether they're tanks or HIMARS missiles, they suck. They're getting destroyed. And if we were a vendor out there selling in the world market, no one's going to buy a U.S. Defensive system anywhere in the world now, because they perform so poorly in actual battle, actual combat. Trump had us negotiated out of Afghanistan and was working on a peaceful exodus that would have kept the Bagram airfield, and we would have helped rebuild Afghanistan. That's what I'm looking to do, is rebuild Afghanistan. They've got mineral wealth that needs to be developed. And if we do it the right way, planned, we can turn them into a progressive first world country with technology, and not have it be in and done in 20-year life of a mine, but do it over 100-year, 200-year period to where they're developed. And you look at what happened to Germany after World War II, look at Japan after World War II. The Marshall Plan went in there, they rebuilt their economies, rebuilt the countries, and became strong allies, and everyone prospered, everyone did well. We could do the same thing with Afghanistan and the same thing with Iraq, except they're Muslims and they're not going to compromise their faith. And they're not going to embrace the Jewish Western banking system that calls for usury, because it's against their Sharia law and they're strict. And so that's why they're being vilified to this date. But we have isolated. We are the United States of America. In my lifetime, it's had two death experiences. One was the murder, an assassination of John F. Kennedy in broad daylight in Dealey Plaza, and two was 9/11. Those were the two, and actually three would be the COVID fraud. It's another fraud. So we've had three brushes with death here. And so how do we get out of this? What do we do next, given the fact that we're going to be isolated and we're going to be broke? we have $32 trillion in on the books government debt right now. There's another $72 trillion out there if you add the state debt, the county, the municipal debt of the cities and towns, and there's $17 trillion in consumer debt out there. And then there's another $30 trillion in real estate debt out there. We can't pay for any of it. And then you look at the $200 trillion of unfunded government mandates that supposed to pay as you go, that there is no way to pay for them unless you just print money. And then we have the derivative problem. So we're going to be looking at a very, very hard economic landing here in this country. And we're not going to be able to afford a $900 billion defense budget. We're not going to be able to afford $1 trillion a year in entitlement payments to support the food stamp program, the Section 8 housing, and all of the WIC for women, infant, and children. We're not going to be able to support that. We're not going to be able to make good on all the pensions for your firefighters, your police officers, your military who served careers. We're not going to be able to afford the pensions for the teachers. We're not going to be able to afford Social Security. So our country is going to go through some very, very hard changes. How do we prepare ourselves for this, and what do we do? And we're going to be cut off. No one's going to be willing to sell us anything. We're not going to be able to, our ability to trade is going to go. It's going to go away. So what do we do? How do we, as a people, survive
But let me
that?
can I let me can I add something to color to that, because I want to hear that.
Absolutely.
Let me just put this in. What I see happening and what you're describing, and I agree with you 100%, it's almost as if, and you and I know go bags, you have your weekend go bag or your week-long go bag pack, and you have your food, your water, your weapons and clothes. So what you're describing, I see similar to let's just say, when these crashes or single crash or however this comes upon people eventually, it's going to be, you have nothing more is going to be coming in. You're not, there's no money coming in, there's no food stamps coming in. All you have is on your back, in your mind, in the strength of your arm, and in the strength of your tribe, your pack, your team, your squad, whatever it is. And where you find yourself, you are in your area, your city, your town, your county of Arizona or New Mexico or California or Idaho or wherever it is. And what do you have? You have only what you have in your substance. And here's the thing, psychologically, you're going to have a lot of people, well, I've got this coming to me. I've got this pension. I've got these things. I've got the, I need this. I. All narcissistic, lust and selfish, and wait a minute, I've got all this invested in IBM. I've got this, I've got that. Part of it, Mike, you and I are of the same mind going, you know what? Fuck it. There's nothing else. I don't need anything. I'm cut off. The only thing I need is what I have on my back, my storage, my friends, my arms, and I'm gonna start from scratch. Everything is back to the foundational level and build up little by little by little. And anything that comes in to steal or tear down or try to, infiltrate has to be defended against. So it's like individual strength amplified by community unity. And that community is defined by your religious, moral, ethnic, tribal, whatever values you want to define yourself, moral character. So tribes are going to be created, but you have to be in the ideological mentality, psychology of, I don't need anything other than my basics. And I think those people who have that attitude, that are flexible enough to leverage their basics into accumulating more for the purposes of trade and all the rest of it, those people are naturally going to be fine. Leaders are fine. Leaders are strong people. The problem is, Mike, we've had beta males and cowards and bureaucrats pretending they're leaders, put into leadership positions that have no character of leader. They don't have the strength. They don't have the charisma. They don't have the moxie. They don't have any alpha male or sigma male, whatever you want to call it, strength of character that says, I'm in charge. And if anybody wants to get in my way or stop me, I'm going to knock you out of the way. Not because of me, but because of the people behind me. I'm leading the people behind me to keep them safe and provide for them and protect for them. And I'm not going to listen or take orders from some scrawny, effeminate, glasses-wearing beta male. These are the new types of leaders that really need to emerge and push out of the way the academics, the professorial types, the bureaucrats, and these betas that have become town mayors and town sheriffs. I think there needs to be there's going to be a complete shuffling of the deck, but I'll hand it back to you. Go ahead.
Well, Scott, you bring up some really good points, and I want to emphasize something that you just glazed over there, and that is your most valuable asset is not going to be what's in your go bag. Your most valuable asset is going to be the guy next to you that you can trust, whether he's your neighbor, whether he's your friend, whatever. But you're going to have to band together with others of like mind who wish to survive, and that's going to be your most valuable asset to keep you alive. Now, granted, we all need food, we all need water, but having someone to cover your six is a huge issue here. And that's going to be the nexus, because when people get hungry and there's no water, there's no food, and you know the cops aren't going to go to work if they're not getting paid. So you know, we look for law and order to completely break down. And so what's going to happen then when we malfunction, when the system breaks and stops? You know, it's like the engine of U.S. culture seizes and no longer runs. How are we going to regulate ourselves and keep ourselves safe and protected? Because other people who do not have these things and do not have the foresight to know how to forage or know how to hunt or know how to fish or grow food are going to be wanting to go out and take whatever they can find. And so there's going to be a difficult period here where Americans are going to turn against Americans. And it's going to be really, really ugly. Now, the Democrats have planted these seeds of racial division among us to where, you know, the blacks don't like the whites, the blacks don't like the Asians, the Asians don't like the blacks, the Mexicans are, they're their own tribe. But we're going to see that sort of a breakdown happen. I fear this, and I don't know how to prevent it. But 9/11 is the linchpin that put us to where we are today. And then you couple that with the fact that they have these extraordinarily broad police powers to where they can see you walking down the street, pick you up, and disappear you, and never tell anybody where you are, throw you in a gulag, in a jail cell someplace, never charge you, and just hold you on suspicion into perpetuity. And they can do this to anyone, any one of us, all of us. They can do it. So I want to recommend that, once again, I quote this often, but read Alexander Solzhenitsyn's book, Gulag Archipelago. Read it. And if you don't have time to read the whole like 980 pages of it, read the one chapter called The Arrest. And in that chapter, he talks about those, we were many. They were few. If only we would have resisted, and if each of us could have taken out one person, they would have run out of people before they ran out of people to arrest. And so we have to keep that in mind, that when they come to arrest you or I, the deep state here, that we need to fight them every step of the way. And if you can only get off one shot, you take the guy's knee out, He's off the table for a couple of years. He's not going to be arresting anybody else anytime soon. But we all have to be willing to do that in order to preserve what freedom we have. But we have this problem that we've got these failing inner cities. We have a permanent underclass in this country that has developed since Lyndon Johnson began the war on poverty. And by the way, as of 2008, guess how much money we had spent on the war on poverty? Guess how much? How much those programs cost the U.S. taxpayers?
I don't know, less than on probably Ukraine.
$23 trillion.
More, okay.
In transfer payments from working people to the welfare state, okay, to people on welfare. And did the war on poverty, what did we get for it? You got more poverty. We got more poor people. It grew. like all government programs, they set themselves up to grow into perpetuity, and they never want to go away. And so they were very successful with that one. It grew immensely. The black population in this country grew from 8% of a 240 million population country to 13% of a 350 million country. They doubled their numbers from roughly 20 million to 43 million people. And so, but they're doing well with their population numbers, but they're not doing well socially or economically. That's a whole different
Well,
discussion.
you know,
But
let
what are
me
these
add
people?
something.
Oh, go ahead.
Let me just add something. When I'm out and about, and this is all that matters. When I'm out and about in the public sphere and meeting people and seeing people, I mean, I was at an event yesterday and I'm seeing, young people between 10 and 30, and I think they're absolutely idiots and worthless with bones in their noses and brains like slush. And then I see older veterans who are between 70 and 90. And half of them have their heads stuck in the ground and just want to tell glory stories of Vietnam or whatever. But when you press them about 9/11 or the chaos like you're describing that's inevitably going to be unfolding around the United States, their mouths go in and there's fear on their face and they don't know how to project it. And God forbid you raise the vaccine with them because these old idiots, for the most part, have gotten the vaccine. Well, you're dead now anyway. You're a walking zombie. So I see these people between 70 and 90, maybe 60 and 90, gone, stupid. The only hope I see are people between 45 and 60. And yeah, I'm right in the middle of that. But I say that advisedly. And yes, you have some, exceptions, of course. I know you're only in your early 40s.
Ah,
But
I wish.
this small window of it's almost like Generation X, the small window of those of us who have the historical memory of remembering the 70s and the 80s and then the 90s to an extent, that 30-year window of America at its zenith. We were at the best of the best of the best. That was when America was great. Yes, you could say the 1950s, but the 60s, 70s, and 80s, there's a generation that remembers life before video game or life before phones, Apple phones, life before the internet, life before social media. My God, the life back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s was far superior to the trash and the shit that we swim in today. But Mike, I
Wow.
look and I think this whole country, except for those between 45, I'll say maybe 40, and 65, that is the only age group that is worth a damn because everything else seems to be either too stupid to know its name, too senile, or they are so invested in this world that they won't even look at the possibilities of these plate tectonic shifts that are coming. Oh, I just got married. I just had a kid. I'm only 35. No, the world has to go. It has to continue. It's like a discombobulation that is that the wheels are the lug nuts are loose and the wheels are getting looser. And I'm looking, going, it's only a matter of time before they completely come off. But I'll hand it back to you.
Well, Scott, you raise some good points there, as always. But that's the problem we have. And I look at it, the death of America and the change. Everything was going pretty good up until 9/11.
Yes.
We still had innovation. We had just went through the dot-com bust. We went through Y2K. Remember Y2K?
Yep.
Well, I still have food saved from Y2K. It's good for another 30 years.
Yeah. Hey, that's going to be a trading staple when Escape from New York comes.
but you look at this and you know what? I'm glad that I have it. I didn't use it then, but we've been flim-flammed so much. And then when they pulled 9/11, the other thing that happened with 9/11 is innovation in this country died.
Yes.
We stopped innovating and we've been on this downward spiral. The Khazar Jew banker types created something called the private equity model, to where, remember back when Reagan deregulated the airlines?
Yes.
We had 53 national carriers, Eastern Airlines, Braniff, PSA, Allegheny, all these different airlines. And
TIA,
this,
Transamerica.
but TWA is gone. Yeah, Pan Americans, Pan
Pan
Am's
American.
gone. Remember all these airlines, and this was going to deregulate it. We were going to get better service, cheaper prices. It was going to be a win for everybody. But what it did instead, it allowed private equity to move in and squeeze the airline industry into consolidation. And when you're consolidating, you're not innovating. And so they did that on the airlines. He did the same thing with telecom. Reagan did. He deregulated telecom. We used to have 156 national networks. Now, some of them may have been regional, cover three or four states, but other ones were national. But that was going to make everything better, more competition, better service, cheaper. It's all a bunch of bull. We've got what, five, six major telecom entities now that are essentially operating as a cartel, and they control what people hear and see, read, because they bought up all the book publishing. And it's you know we're being driven into smaller and smaller, fewer and fewer choices. Now, remember one of the complaints about the Soviet. You're eaten by a car. We have one model. It'll take you 8 years to get it delivered if you order it today. And it's expensive. We're going in the same direction by a different route that the Soviet Union was. You know, we're having less and less competition, and higher prices, shittier everything. Everything's gotten shittier. You know, I mean, remember back when you used to actually go to a restaurant, you actually got service. Remember back when you could call up and have a complaint to your phone company, you got someone on the phone.
Yes.
You didn't have to go through an automated menu of 10 different buttons you have to press. And then you finally get to talk to a live person in Pakistan or India, and who you can barely understand. I mean, we used to have things pretty good here, but 9/11 was the spark that burnt all that down and
Yes.
brought all these things into the situation we're now. 9/11 was the catalyst that signaled this globalist cabal that we're going to consolidate, we're going to control the entire world, we're going to dominate the planet. And it's up to us to not comply at this point and to
Yes.
defeat them that way. But as I said, my opening comments were the biggest crime of 9/11 is the real perpetrators are still walking free. They've never been brought to justice. And that tells you, should be a good hint as to how controlled as a people we are, how successful they have been to date. And I don't see any way out of this. I don't see any way out of this other than a bloody civil war. I mean, the
Yes.
best thing that could happen is that the BRICS countries all do what they call Operation Sandman and dump all the treasury bills, sell them all the same day, so they're selling for pennies on the dollar, and collapse the entire US economy and the Federal Reserve. It'll be really awful for us here, but after 5, 10 years, we can dig out of it. It'll be the best thing that ever happened to us if we can break the back of the Federal Reserve.
Let me ask you another possibility of geopolitical maneuvering. We see Ukraine completely dissolving like a sugar cube in water. It's completely collapsing. Ukraine and the Ukrainian military are just like logs that the US is grinding into the buzz mill of Russia, right? Russia's not on the attack. Its defensive military is just in full operation. And the Ukrainians are running into the sawmill, being shredded and destroyed. And the US and the Khazarians are doing that intentionally, it seems like, to free up these areas. Well, it led me to think, you know, on a strategic level, Russia doesn't want to appear as the conqueror and the claimer of territory, but it can seem like the liberator of humanity if it followed a certain geopolitical strategy, and that would be go through and wipe out every neo-Nazi in Ukraine and execute them and prosecute them and then execute them all the way up to the Polish border. And you may have to destroy everything in Ukraine, including the historical buildings, and call it a different name for a country. It's not the Ukraine anymore, it's something else. But take that entire country and dedicate it to the BRICS multipolar world. New renaissance of humanity. Invite the conservative traditional family values, Christians, people from America, from Britain, from Germany, from France, from Scandinavia, from wherever, the West to move to Ukraine. If you flee the tyranny of your deep straight Democrat fascists, come to Ukraine and set up communities like they're doing in St. Petersburg. So if Russia set up Ukraine as a sanctuary for conservative, religious, traditional family values, marriages between a man and a woman, there's no faggot rainbow flag or transgenderism or climate change bullshit or eating bugs. And it is also the new center of the multipolar world emerging to replace the United Nations and the IMF and the World Bank and all the other stuff. All of that old colonial world ends with the dollar. And the new renaissance, the new beginning, starts with Ukraine as the hub, the center of this meeting of the multipolar world. And you could set up a court and other things. I'll put it to you, Mike, about the soundness of something like that. Or what can you add? Go ahead.
I think it's a good concept. But let me break down your opening comment on that setup a little bit. The biggest problem in Ukraine has is the same problem we have here in the U.S. And the problem with Ukraine is that they are a Christian country with a Christian army, with a Jewish government that wants them dead. I mean, the Kolomoyskys of the world, the Zelenskys of the world, they don't care if they lose 500,000 soldiers and have another 2 million maimed for life with missing arms and limbs. They don't care. They want that to happen. They want to get rid of these people. The same problem we have. I mean, we are essentially the cannon fodder for Judea International. We didn't have a fight in Afghanistan. We didn't have a fight in Iraq. We don't have a fight in Iran. No. But they want to take us there and use our young men, our young women to fight their war because they are so few. And they put themselves in a place where they control our government. You don't believe me? Look at Biden's cabinet. And Trump's no better. I mean, he had them all over the place in his cabinet, too.
You're right.
We need to remove that entire influence from our government and from our culture. We need to purge it. All of the Jewish influence, the Zionist, the Khazar influence needs to be purged in every way. If you do that, the world will get along pretty damn well. There wasn't a war in the Middle East until they created Israel.
That's
when it
right.
was Palestine, it was a peaceful place. Mm-hmm. Now that it's Israel, it's been at war since 1947, actually before that, because of the Balfour Agreement. But the Jews of the world, the wealthy Jews, the moneyed, created that situation. They leveraged Great Britain into giving them that. It was a territory, a protectorate of Great Britain, and they leveraged them into giving it to them to support them during World War I. And these issues, I mean, these are bigger. These are multi-generational issues here that go back 1,000 years since the Khazars were defeated by the Russians and the Persians and driven out of Khazaria and the great diaspora. That put them all over Europe and Russia. And so these people are a problem. They are the problem. They are the enemy of humanity. And they have to be dealt with accordingly because they're predators. I was watching a video the other day of this guy, Michael Young. He was down in that Darien Gap area in Central America, just where it leaves Colombia and goes up where all the illegals are coming in. And he had a great quote, and he says, not all fish can live in the same aquarium. Mm-hmm. And the fish that are coming through here are going to destroy the fish that are in the aquarium of the United States.
Yes.
And we're bringing these savages in who have no comprehension of what our way of life is and what we do here and how we deal with things. And they're being brought into this country and set loose. Well, that's going to be like setting piranhas and betta fish in with your goldfish. And the goldfish are going to be the dinner. And that's what's going to happen to people in this country. We're going to be the dinner of these savages that are coming into our country. And so, and this is all by design. This is all George Soros funding. It all goes back to the Jewish money and the people who want to tear this down. I mean, if you read the Elders of Zion, if you're familiar with the Caligari plan, they spell it all out. They tell us what they want to do, and they don't care who's in the way. They want to destroy white people in particular, because we're the only ones who can stop them. They are not creators. They're parasites. And we don't need them. They need us. The host does not need a parasite.
The
host.
The other thing that I see happening, and you're kind of provoking this thought, is there are people in the country, blacks, Hispanics, for the most part, and you have others, but they will use the chaos as a as an agent, as an excuse, as an accelerator, as a trigger to unleash the pent up animosity, jealousy, envy, lust, to violence. You know, you see that in glimpses of these lunatic fool blacks who have these lunatic fool whites kissing their boot kind of thing. You see these pasty skinned lefties from Starbucks, you know, who are, you know, just Black Lives Matter and all this other bullshit. And they're kissing the boots of these moral idiot blacks, thinking that, you know, this is their day of rage. You hear this in blacks on their video saying every white person should be dead and blah, 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 blah. I look at that as not as I find them laughingly disgusting. But I also look and I think there is a lot of people in this country who are going to drool and lust and get excited at the fact of being unleashed. Look at the George Floyd Black Lives Matter riots. Half these monkeys came out of their caves, not because they like George Floyd or anything else, but because they wanted to loot and pillage and destroy and get their lusts out. I see a lot of people in this country waiting and encouraging and desiring to really engage in this violence and anarchy. You know, I think it's something to analyze. Let's see, Mike just got cut off. Let's see if we can bring him back. And I don't say that cynically. I say it advisedly. There's something that's happened. So there is a population that is dedicated to trauma, that is dedicated to anarchy, that is dedicated to chaos. These are the troglodyte, knuckle-dragging, barbaric savages and fools that are angry all the time, that have been, you know, grown up without mothers or fathers or in welfare camps or on drugs or whatever their issues are. They've got a lot of issues. Maybe they were put on drugs as a youngster. But they are positioned to use and take advantage of any sort of social disruption that is facilitated by an economic disruption. So, and that is where people need to be prepared to exercise their Second Amendment, exercise all necessary defenses. Anything and everything that is needed to defend your property, your liberty, and your family needs to be prepared for. And again, always understand that the rights under the Constitution are the Bill of Rights, but the Constitution expressly identifies the inviolable rights that men and women have given to them by God, not given to them by the government. Your rights are not given by the United States or the legislature or the Supreme Court or the president. Your rights are given to you by Almighty God, your creator. You have a right to life. He gave you life, not the government. Any mask, any vaccine is a threat and an attack upon your life, and you must not allow it or tolerate it. The other thing is you have a right to defend that life with the Second Amendment. That is where people need to recognize you do not need a license or a permit from any state. The Second Amendment says a well-regulated militia being necessary for a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That simply means that a well-regulated militia is individuals who already have their guns, their swords, their spears, their bows, whatever weapons, whatever arms they have, they bring them to a place and get well ordered, get well regulated, get well disciplined in maneuvers, all sorts of operations, tactical operations. Well regulated means efficient. So it's not just a chaos or a stampede, but people are able to understand military tactics. There's all sorts of land maneuver, infantry training, land navigation, basic shooting, basic self-defense, basic knife fighting, and advanced as well. But that's what a well-regulated militia represents. And that means people, the right of the people, the right of persons, the right of individuals to keep in their house, on their person, in their cars, and bear arms shall not be infringed. Mike, I was just saying the lusts of the savages are going to use the social disruption and the economic disruption to vent, and they will come out. And that is when people need to be prepared to exercise their defense and their Second Amendment rights to defend themselves. But I just wanted to, you know, when you said, I don't know how to stop this racial animosity that they put the blacks and the Hispanics and all that against each other, that's what came to me. There are those who are looking for an opportunity to become violent and chaotic and anarchistic. Well, and we just have to defend. We're not interested in persuading them. Other than persuading them by a high velocity round or a bayonet in the throat if they try and do some sort of an attack. I'll pen it to you.
Well, speaking of bayonets, I just bought a bayonet lug today for my Remington 870 police special. And that'll make it a little more enhanced of a home defense apparatus there. Yes. But, you know, here's the thing. What I don't understand about the blacks is, you know, they've never picked any cotton. I've never owned any slaves, and so their animosity is not based in current reality. Yeah. Their animosity has been fed to them by the educational system and a lot of the propaganda, all Jewish control, which wants the blacks and whites to fight. There are disparities between us. I mean, we can't fix the IQ gap between the two races. I mean, you look at the mean IQ for a white, it's about 100, 102, 3. Look for the mean IQ of a black, it's 75 to 80. We can't fix that. There's nothing we can do. We're not responsible. It's just how it is. And life's tough. It's even tougher when you're stupid. And I feel bad for them, but I don't know how to fix it. I didn't do it. This is their genetic inheritance or legacy that they've got. I can't do anything about that for them, but it just is what it is. But what do we do next? I mean, like I said, this is the anniversary of 9/11. And one of the first things that we could do if we wanted to stop the decline of this country is to bring the real perpetrators to justice. Now, I think there's two chances, and I think Slim is out of town. That leaves none. I really think, and one of the reasons that we've never identified the real perpetrators is because so much of the Washington establishment is in on it.
Yes.
That's the problem. You talk about your boss at
Booz Allen Hamilton, Dove Zackheim.
Zackheim, they're in on it.
Yes.
He's in on it. How many other people did he have assisting him? I mean, in helping him in the cover up?
I can name him. Ian Brzezinski, for one, the son of Zbigniew Brzezinski, who's Mia Brzezinski, his other sister, was in MSNBC with Scarborough. And he's got another brother, Charlie Brzezinski or some other Brzezinski, who is now making waves in the European or African situation. Brzezinskis all these people in the defense contracting military realm. And it goes to Mattis. It goes to Stanley McChrystal. It goes to Petraeus. It goes to Flynn. It goes to all of these bureaucrats in a uniform that think they're heroes. They're not.
Who hijacked our foreign policy post 9/11. They put themselves in position. 9/11 happened and they moved forward to implement their agenda. Their agenda is not beneficial. It is anti-constitutional. It benefits them and their cause, but it doesn't do anything for the American people. And we need to get back to a form of government that is beneficial to the American people. And that's where we've lost track. I mean, as we've hinted around in other conversations, we can get back there, but we have to start dealing with some truths and some realities. We have to start breaking some systems. I mean, when Lyndon Johnson put the welfare system in place to help the blacks, help them get out of poverty, the war on poverty, to end poverty, I don't think, maybe I'm short-sighted, but it wasn't sold as something that was going to take four generations to end. It was supposed to be a temporary hand up to help them cross a threshold, and it's become a permanent thing. I mean, no one was ever thought we'd have generations of mothers having children intergenerational on the welfare system, depending on it to survive. That's not what it was sold as. That's not what we were given to pass these things. I mean, it's another, any contract that government makes, they break. I look at the Simpson-Mazzoli Act, a one-time amnesty for 800,000 illegal aliens who've been here for years. 3.2 million, now we had seven other amnesties, and we've got an open border now. These things have to be rectified or we are done. We have to fix this. And we have to pull a page out of the Marxist playbook, and by any means necessary.
Yes.
We have to become as bad or worse monsters than they are to defeat them.
Yes. Yes.
And I don't see us getting there because things aren't tough enough. Now, yes. When things get tough, when this financial collapse comes, and it's coming, when things get that rough, then maybe people will grow a pair when they watch their 4 and 5 year old children starving to death. Maybe then they'll grow a pair of balls and grow a backbone. But until then, I don't see soft America getting hard, and we need to harden ourselves. And we need to be willing to, you know, to cut throats and break backs to protect our people and our way of life. Mm-hmm. And if we have to do that, then that's what we have to do. They're forcing it upon us. I mean, we were willing to go along and get along. I've always been a Boy Scout. I followed the rules. I worked hard. I went to college. I saved money. I got everything the right way, only to get fucked in the end. And, you know, whenever, like I said, when people aren't getting their football and beer on Sunday, and instead they're watching their 4-year-old daughter starve to death because dad doesn't have a job and can't get food, then maybe we'll have some, men will reemerge in this country. And until then, yeah. I'm not expecting much.
You know, in closing, when you're talking about that, I've always had that drill sergeant attitude at heart from both early beginnings in Civil Air Patrol and then the Army later on. But as the drill sergeant, I always look, there is an excellence, there is a standard, there is you behave and you dress and you conduct yourself as the best of the best. There's no wiggle room, there's no frayed, there's no looseness. You are exact and precise and tight at all times. And you do not let anyone who's not tight and exact in exactly the way that's required into your team. I want Rambos, only Rambos, and nothing but Rambos on my team. I don't train Gomer Pyles, and I sure as hell don't let Gomer Pyles in to infect and erode the esprit de corps, the standards of my Rambo team excellence. This is where we are right now, you and I and many others. We are at that. We demand excellence and will receive and accept nothing other than excellence. And the hardship, the suffering that needs to come upon people is what will burn out of them this childlike narcissism and baby. And, well, what about this? I need this. What about this? This wimpy, effeminate complaining in this culture that has saturated this culture in these generations for 30 years, this is the death of America. And only through starving and through hardship will they be open to the hard man training the hard man discipline that we demand and that we direct, because that's how we conduct ourselves and our own character. So, Mike, I'll hand it back to you on the last closing few minutes that we have on how we are to really conduct ourselves as leaders moving forward. I'm not interested in followers. I'm interested in people who meet that standard of excellence, because at the end of the day, it's about your survival. And you will not survive with a bunch of complaining, wimpy, sad, stupid individuals who talk too loud or smoke in the jungle or turn you into the enemy or backstab you like Benedict Arnold. Those are the scum and the weak and the Gomer piles. We want only the most excellent individuals. And I think we have to really focus on that moving forward as a society. Go ahead.
Well, Scott, you just summarized my closing comment here very succinctly. One of the bigger problems we have and why we're failing as a nation has been the lowering of standards on everything. We have lowered the standards. Okay, well, the blacks don't do as well in school, so we're going to lower the standards so that the blacks aren't doing any better. The whites are doing worse. And so I want to recall, I know you've seen the movie Full Metal Jacket.
Yes.
Outstanding movie. And I really enjoyed the boot camp section of the movie. Yeah. Where they rely on company punishment. For those of you who haven't seen the movie, I highly recommend it. But what they do is they've got one screw up in the company, and he is resistant to training. He's not a team player. He's a screw up. And so what the drill sergeant does every time he screwed up, it didn't matter if he did push-ups or not, he wouldn't do them right anyway. Every time he screwed up, he punished the entire company for this guy's screw up. Then he let the company discipline him to where he had to conform, because he couldn't survive if he didn't. And yep. They made it very obvious to him that this is just the beginning of your nightmare if you don't get in line and make, you know, make yourself up to standard.
Yes.
But that is the issue here, is we have allowed a softening of standards where there shouldn't be a softening. We have to hold standards true. It's one of these things you just can't dilute them. You know, if you're going to read at eighth grade level, read at eighth grade level. Don't lower it to fifth grade level so these black kids can pass. Because then what you're doing is you're damaging your best and your brightest. And I'll tell you, the kids, I mean, I'm going to go off on a tangent here, but this is about our education. We spend so much money on the special needs kids, and we're spending 3 to 5 times as much as we do on the average kid. You know what kids get screwed? The bright kids.
Yes.
The high IQ kids, they get screwed, because they, if you spend the money on you got a special needs kid's going to shit himself his whole life. Somebody's got to take care of him, but yet they're going to spend 20 times as much on him as they are on some brilliant kid or some average kid. You know, I mean, honest to God, parents, if you have a special needs kid, I'm real sorry for you, but it's not my problem. My problem is to get get the next generation educated so they can be the best and brightest they can.
Nope.
If we're going to spend money per child, then make it equal across the board, not according to what their needs are. Because if you're going to make it what their needs are, you're cheating the best and brightest.
Right.
To subsidize the special needs. I'm real sorry. We need to get our minds straight, because women fall for this. Well, he's special needs and he needs help. I don't care. I want to produce the best scientists. I want to produce the best engineers, the best doctors, you know, the best of everything through the education system. And you know, those who can't cut it, can't cut it.
That's right. That's how everybody needs to conduct themselves, who their friends are. You can get rid of your family, turn away from them and have nothing to do with them. But every person that you associate with should be excellent. You do not associate with below excellent standards. That's the way moving forward. I'm sorry, some people need to be thrown out of the canoe or left behind, or let them form their own tribe. They'll be eaten by coyotes. But we need to focus on developing excellence if we are going to survive and prosper and flourish and command in the coming decades that are approaching.
And here's why: if we're going to be globally competitive ever again, we have to do that because the Russians are that way, the Chinese Absolutely. Are that way, every other society out there except the Western G7 is that right. way. We That's mollycoddle, right. we baby and support the weakest to the detriment of the strongest.
Yep.
And we have yep. a back
ass. And it's the Jewish, Khazarian, Israeli leftist types that have been pushing that agenda for a century to weaken America by pushing this, you know, caring for the retards and the mongoloids and all the rest of it.
Well, they used to be institutions, and now they're mingling them with the general population to socialize them, to give them the experience. I don't care about it. I care about producing a functional next generation.
Yes.
But Scott, since I have, you've heard me say this many times, this Khazarian group, this cabal, they use our virtues against us.
Yes.
They use our virtue of kindness and of compassion and of wanting to help these dysfunctional types in our society, wanting to help them, and they use it to cripple us. The reason we've got so many illegal aliens, they're all refugees suddenly.
Yes.
Well, no one wants to punish a refugee who's in a war-torn country or is in an earthquake or some natural disaster. They're refugees. You help them. Suddenly, they're all refugees. Like I said, they find the loophole and they exploit it. And so we need to change our system of law from one of precedent to one of principle, where the laws are on the principle. Did you violate the spirit of the law, or are you in compliance with the spirit of the law? And that is an entirely different discussion for another evening. And LT, thank you so much for having me on this day, 9/11. And folks, the biggest crime is 9/11 perpetrators have not been punished yet. Yet. We're still going to get these bastards. We're going to get them. I hope they know we're coming for them. I hope they have nightmares about it, because I'm coming.
Amen. I agree with you 100%. We are coming and we will get them. Thank you for joining us so much, Mike. We really appreciate it. It's a fantastic presentation on the 9/11 and where we're going. And thank you for joining us on globalfreedomtv.com, Great Awakenings. Email us up there. Give us your thoughts. We look forward to hearing from you. We will see you tomorrow. God bless you. Good night.
Thanks, LG.